This is DW News, and these are our top stories. Democrat Zohran Mamdani has been elected mayor of New York City. The 34-year-old will become the city's first Muslim mayor and its youngest leader in generations. The victory caps his meteoric rise to becoming one of the country's most prominent political figures. Democrats also won elections for state governor in Virginia and New Jersey. French authorities are holding a man who they say deliberately rammed his car into pedestrians and cyclists, injuring 10 people. Prosecutors say the suspect shouted Allahu Akbar, or God is great, in Arabic when he was apprehended. The incident occurred on the island of Oléron on France's Atlantic coast north of Bordeaux. This is DW News from Berlin. You'll find much more on our website. That is DW.com.
This is your Latin beat.
LPR, Latino Public Radio, presenta. Entrega especial.
Hi, it's Steve Klamkin back with you here on Latino Public Radio. And joining me today is Congressman Seth Magaziner in Rhode Island's 2nd District. Seth, thanks very much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. This is great, and congrats on the new show.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. Hoping a lot of people join us and tune in. We have to talk politics because as we're speaking, it's right after Tuesday's Election Day. Not so many elections here in Rhode Island, but boy, you had a few big ones in some states that saw big gains by Democrats. So what's your take?
Yeah, it was a big night for Democrats last night in Virginia, New Jersey, California, even Georgia and Pennsylvania. There were races where Democrats won big. I think it's not complicated. I think it was a referendum on Donald Trump's economy. People sense that this is an economy where the wealthy are doing very well. If you are a billionaire going to parties at Mar-a-Lago, you are doing better than you ever have. But for the average person, for middle-class families, for working people, costs are going up, incomes are flat, and people are feeling real financial stress. The tariffs are not helping. The exploding costs of health insurance because of the Republican cuts to health care are not helping. And so I think people were trying to send a message that the way the economy is heading under Donald Trump and the Republicans is not working for them. And that's why you saw not just big wins for Democrats last night, but big wins with high turnout as well.
Nationwide polling on any range of issues show things are turning not in the president's favor. He's really kind of lagged in pretty much every issue that he's tried to make a name for himself. Is this a sign of just stemming the tide, or is there something really building in terms of momentum here?
Yeah, again, it's all about the economy. It's all about the economy. I talked to Rhode Islanders, and what am I hearing? I'm hearing that the price of groceries is up. People don't like the tariffs. They don't understand why is the president putting taxes on coffee and fruit and food that we import that we can't even grow in the United States. The health care costs. We are in the middle of open enrollment right now. And people who get their health insurance from HealthSource RI are going online and seeing that they're going to be paying hundreds of dollars more a month for their insurance next year. Like, I've had countless people calling my office asking what they should do because they can't afford to pay thousands of dollars more for their health insurance. So people are being hit by high food costs, healthcare costs. There's a sense that the economy is just kind of stuck. But at the same time, what's Donald Trump doing? He is sending $40 billion to his friend in Argentina. He is throwing lavish parties at Mar-a-Lago. He's just knocking down the east wing of the White House to build a multi-million dollar ballroom. And congressional Republicans are just not doing their job. They think that their job is to work for Donald Trump instead of working for the people. And I think, again, voters last night sent a message that they're not happy with it.
Here we are speaking in the middle of a more than a month-long government shutdown. I think a lot of people have become used to dysfunction in Washington, but this takes dysfunction to a new level, doesn't it?
It really does. And again, Republicans have total control of government right now, the House, the Senate, and the White House. And what is happening is that they are refusing to continue the Affordable Care Act funding, Affordable Care Act tax credits. As a result of that, people's health insurance costs are going to go up by hundreds of dollars a month.
And that's the sticking point for Democrats.
100%. Right? And again, like the Democratic position, I don't think is unreasonable. We want to pass a budget. I want to pass a budget that will reopen the government, put federal workers back to work. But we also need to have some assurances that health care is going to be funded for the millions of Americans and hundreds of thousands of Rhode Islanders who won't be able to afford it otherwise.
I know you can't speak for the Senate. The president and Republican leaders are saying if only five Democrats would in the Senate would come over and vote with them, do you think they're going to continue to stand pat?
I think the pressure is on Republicans to fund health care because, again, it's open enrollment. People are seeing that they're going to be paying thousands of dollars more for their health insurance when they're already paying inflated costs for food and other essentials. And Republicans need to just do the right thing, extend the health care funding so that people's costs don't spike, and we can get this whole thing behind us.
What's your sense of the rationale behind the Republican stance? Is it to support the tax cuts that the president's continuing?
You know, it's interesting. When billionaires wanted tax cuts earlier this year, you know, Republicans moved heaven and earth to get it done. And they passed a multi-trillion dollar tax cut that mostly went to the very rich. But now, when the middle class needs some relief from these health care costs, Republicans and Donald Trump are saying, oh, we're not sure we can do it. This is, again, part of a pattern, right? When the elite and the well-connected want something from Trump, they get it. Tariffs is another good example, right? You know, those big companies that have access to the White House, Apple and NVIDIA and Tesla, they can go into the Oval Office or go to Mar-a-Lago and Trump will say, oh yeah, you're exempt from the tariffs. But for the average small business in Rhode Island that is struggling to pay the bills, they can't just waltz into the White House and ask for an exemption. And so the frustration that people are feeling is all born out of the fact that this economy increasingly is rigged for the well-connected and not for the everyday person.
Is it willful ignorance on the part of the president and his supporters that the tariffs are paid by American consumers?
Yeah, tariffs are a tax. Like, tariffs are a tax. They're a tax on imports, and there are a number of products. Coffee is a good example. Coffee is up 40% over the last year. We don't grow coffee in the United States. So why are we putting a tax on it? Right? But the other thing that happens is when you raise tariffs on imports, other countries retaliate by raising their tariffs on our exports. So that's what you're seeing, for example, with farmers across the country. Farmers are livid because China and other countries, Canada, others, are raising their tariffs in retaliation, and it's harder for American farmers to sell their goods to foreign markets. And so listen, there may be narrow situations here or there where tariffs make sense, but these broad, across-the-board, chaotic tariffs that the president has been monkeying around with, illegally, by the way, in my view, are just hurting consumers, just hurting, again, middle-class people. And the billionaires and the multimillionaires, they're fine because they got their tax cuts over the summer. But the middle class is still waiting for their relief, and they're not getting it.
Well, as we speak, the Supreme Court is going to hear, you know, be the final arbiter, one would think. But the Supreme Court seemed to have gone the president's way on most issues.
Yeah, again, unfortunately, I think a lot of the Supreme Court justices, like the Republican members of Congress, think that they work for Donald Trump. And it is time for Congress to reassert its role as a co-equal branch of government, as a check and balance on the administration. That's why I think it is so important that Democrats win back control of Congress next year so that we can put some guardrails around what the president is doing.
That's unlikely to happen until and unless the Democrats regain maybe the House.
Exactly.
All right, I'm speaking with Seth Magaziner, the congressman here in the 2nd Rhode Island District. And I've got to ask you about immigration and the borders, which, you know, things have gotten kind of strange in the last few months, where we see ICE kind of running around picking up people. It's come to Rhode Island. But I'm told that this is not far afield from what went on in previous administrations, that ICE was out and picking up people who were not in the country legally, and that there's nothing new under the sun here.
Well, there's a lot that's new. And I will say, I serve on the Homeland Security Committee
right.
in the House of Representatives. And so in my oversight role, what I see is a very different Department of Homeland Security, and not in a good way. Taking a step back, Donald Trump promised, and Kristi Noem, that they were going to go after, quote, the worst of the worst, criminals, gang members. And if that's what they were doing, I think we would all be okay with it. But that's not what they're doing. By their own data, the vast majority of the people who they have detained and deported had no criminal record at all. They're deporting legal visa holders. They're deporting even United States citizens. Some of the stories that have come to us on the Homeland Security Committee, a four-year-old U.S. citizen child with cancer
right.
was deported. The Barranco family, you know, this guy, he is a gardener, a landscaper out in California. He's lived in the United States, worked here for 30 years, no criminal record, was tackled in the street, detained for deportation. He has three sons who are United States Marines.
Right.
There are illegal visa holders who have served in the military, Purple Heart recipients who are being deported. And so, taking a step back here, I think most Americans agree on three things when it comes to immigration. Number one, people who commit serious crimes do not have the right to be here if they're not here legally. So people with criminal records should absolutely be detained and in most cases deported. Number two, most people agree that everyone should have access to due process, the ability to appear in front of a judge. Because if you don't have that, then what's to stop them from deporting innocent people, the wrong people, U.S. citizens? There needs to be some kind of process. And then finally, if I can,
yeah.
for the people who are just trying to make a living, who maybe have been in this country for 20, 30 years, no criminal record, going to work every day, there should be some sort of a process for them to earn legal status. Most Americans agree with all three of those things. Unfortunately, that's not the approach that the Trump administration is taking.
So where is the backstop here? In a normal world, one would think Congress might,
yes.
might be, and as you say, you're on the oversight committee and that would ostensibly hold some sway here, but the Republicans on that committee, what, are
yeah.
fine with the way things are going? Or?
Well, they haven't been meeting. I mean, that's the other thing that we haven't even talked
indeed.
About is, you know, Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, has kept the Republicans on vacation for almost 2 months now. Mm. Republicans in Congress are on vacation getting paid while federal workers are on the job not getting paid, which is ridiculous. But on immigration specifically, I think what you'll see is this. If Democrats take back control of Congress, we will continue to support detaining and deporting people who are dangerous. We will continue to provide resources for that. We will continue to provide legal authority for that. But we will also ensure that there is due process, that people have the right to appear before a judge, that ICE agents and other federal law enforcement have to have identification, just like any other law enforcement agency does. No more wearing masks. Just basic due process. That's good, you know, good police work, real police work, involves due process. We're going to continue to support, deporting dangerous people who don't have a right to be here, but there needs to be due process.
So on these issues, economic issues, immigration issues, just on a whole range of issues, it's clear there's a march toward authoritarianism if we're not there already.
Yes.
How do you stem that tide? And, I mean, is this the way America wants to go, do you think?
It's not. Well, clearly not. I mean, based on the results of last night's elections, clearly not. Listen, I think that Donald Trump won because Americans were convinced that he was going to lower prices and tackle inflation. He has not done that. In fact, he's done the opposite by putting tariffs in place that are inflationary.
It's also been said that Democrats weren't really speaking or engaging with the public at large.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. And I think certainly by the end of his administration, President Biden was not the communicator that we needed him to be, was not rallying people in the way that a party leader normally would. Mm. And look, you learn more from your losses than your wins. And I think that the Democratic Party came away from the last election with a lot to learn. But right now we find ourselves in a place where the economy is not working for the middle class. Donald Trump is raising costs on people instead of lowering them. People do not like his authoritarian tendencies. And people, most of all, I think, are angry by the fact that while they're struggling, he is throwing money at Argentina, throwing money at ballrooms, throwing money at private jets for the FBI director to go visit his girlfriend. I mean, the disconnect there is I think, really infuriating to people, and we need to speak up against that. I will also say, I believe that we as Democrats and all Americans also need to center ethics reform in the election next year. The economy is issue number one, but ethics is number two. It starts with our own house. I have a bill to ban members of Congress from trading stocks. It's a bipartisan bill. It's common sense. We should pass it. People don't like members of Congress trading stocks. But people also don't like Donald Trump selling cryptocurrency out of the Oval Office or giving pardons to people who invest in his family's businesses. That kind of corruption really rubs people the wrong way, too. And we need to end all of it.
I want to take advantage of the opportunity here to ask you, as a Jewish member of Congress, about the situation that's sprung up in Smithfield, where members of the football team are accused of hazing a Jewish player, and now there's a lot of to and fro, back and forth about that. But I'm wondering about the rise of anti-Semitism that's pretty clear in this country, and I'm wondering if people under Donald Trump feel free to express themselves in that way, and maybe they're being pushed in that direction.
So there has been a marked rise of anti-Semitism in this country over the last few years. Certainly after the October 7th attacks, there was a significant spike in anti-Semitic attacks all across the country.
Everywhere, yeah.
Yeah, and again, as a member of the Homeland Security Committee, I've spent a lot of time looking at this. It's a problem. It's a problem that needs to be called out. And, you know, you mentioned Donald Trump, but I will say this is a problem that exists across the political spectrum. There's anti-Semitism on the far left. There's anti-Semitism on the far right. You saw it at the Charlottesville march where far-right people holding torches were saying, Jews shall not replace us.
Right.
You see that with Tucker Carlson interviewing a Holocaust denier just this week. And so this is something, I think, deeper than partisan politics that we need to reckon with as a country. You know, as far as the incident in Smithfield, I will say that the accusations are incredibly concerning and need to be taken seriously. I understand there's some...
And seem to be credible.
They seem to be. I understand some of the parents are saying that perhaps the facts haven't been accurately portrayed, but I would think at the very least in a situation like that, because the accusations are so serious that there needs to be some sort of a probation while an investigation takes place. And if the accusations are found to be true, then there need to be serious consequences.
The town has initiated an investigation, but I mean, who knows how long that could take or what, you know, what shape that may take. And, you know, people tend to forget and, you know, another incident, you know, other things pile up.
The town and the school district need to act with urgency, and I think it certainly appears that the school district has not acted with the urgency that that an incident like this would demand.
And I have to ask, in terms of foreign affairs, you know, America's support for Israel really hasn't helped in this regard. It seems that it might have fueled the anti-Semitism, the rise in anti-Semitism, at least to an extent.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I a few things here. What happened on October 7th was the worst slaughter of Jewish people in the world since the Holocaust.
Right.
And it is absolutely appropriate for Israel to try to take out the Hamas terrorists that committed those atrocities and get the hostages back home. I also believe that the way in which the Israeli government went about the war led to excessive civilian casualties and suffering, and that it is important that this war be brought to a permanent end. I think that when it comes to the impact on anti-Semitism in the United States, there are absolutely anti-Semitic groups that have taken advantage of well-intentioned movements for peace. And so, you know, I think the vast majority of the people who are out there protesting, calling for an end to the war, disagreeing with the way that Israel has conducted the war, are people who are not anti-Semitic and have pure motives. But we are being naive if we don't think that anti-Semitic groups have infiltrated those movements, have had the opportunity to shape some of those movements, and have made the country less safe for Jewish people.
Indeed. Well, I have to ask you, here we are, it's a year out before the midterm elections in 2026. How are you approaching that? You have some seemingly the prospect of well-funded opposition. We spoke earlier this week with Vic Mellor, who's a Republican and is getting in, and tells me he could self-fund a race to the tune of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
How do you view the approaching campaign?
Well, again, I think that if I stay focused on working to lower costs and make the economy better for Rhode Islanders, opposing the tariffs, supporting health care funding so that people's health insurance costs and drug costs go down, working for an economy that helps the middle class as opposed to the super wealthy, as long as I stay focused on that and Republicans in Congress are focused on helping Donald Trump and the billionaire class, that I'm going to be fine electorally, as will Democrats across the country. I don't know any of my prospective opponents. I will note that we have a recent history with an out-of-state Republican candidate coming into the state and spending millions of dollars of their own money, and I think not even clearing 40% of the vote despite spending millions. I'm talking, of course, about in the governor's race 2 years ago. So, you know, the money doesn't scare me, because I think our message is going to be sound.
And notwithstanding, I mean, we talked at the outset about the tide may be turning away from Donald Trump, but he and the Republicans have had great gains here in Rhode Island in the last few cycles.
Have they?
The gains in terms of electoral.
What I'll say is this: my view has always been, the way I approach the job, I will work with both sides of the aisle. I will work with Republicans. I will work with the Trump administration when it is good for Rhode Islanders. But I will also call out extremism whenever necessary. That has been my approach, and it's an approach that I think most Rhode Islanders agree with. In the last election, I got something like 10 or 12,000 more votes in the district than Vice President Harris did, which meant that there were a lot of Trump supporters who also voted for me, because I think that they appreciate that approach.
Do you take heart from that?
I do. Yeah. And I think it's because of my leadership on things like congressional stock trading and banning that. I think it's because I've shown support for law enforcement, delivering resources for, you know, the Cranston Police Department, Coventry Police Department, Johnston Police Department. And because, again, there are a lot of people out there who voted for Trump, but also want to have a voice in Washington that will be a counterweight to Trump when he goes too far, whether it be on tariffs or any other issue.
I appreciate that your stock trading bill is done in a bipartisan way, and you are obviously talking to some Republicans about it, but there's not a lot of that going on on the whole, is there?
We got to find a way to continue to work with the other side. We have to. And, I'm on the stock trading bill, My co-lead on the bill is Chip Roy from Texas. He is a member of the Freedom Caucus. He is one of the furthest to the right members of Congress. But we work together very well on this issue. If you look at the other people I've brought together to lead on this bill, Chip Roy, Tim Burchett, who's another very conservative member from Tennessee, Brian Fitzpatrick, who's a more moderate Republican from Pennsylvania. Then on the Democratic side, AOC, Pramila Jayapal. Right. So it's a really interesting...
Broad spectrum.
Broad spectrum.
Yeah.
And I think we'll ultimately be successful. We need the Speaker to give us a vote. But it's important, again, like, oppose extremism whenever necessary, but work across the aisle whenever possible. That has been my philosophy.
I just want to ask you, do you have other bills or other ideas that you want to bring into Congress?
So in addition to the stock trading bill, my other highest priority bill is to guarantee vacation time for all American workers. Mm. Burnout is real. People work hard in this country, and it's good that we work hard, but people deserve to take a break every once in a while. And every other major country in the world guarantees at least 20 days of paid vacation. We guarantee zero in the United States. My bill would guarantee at least 10 days of vacation per year for all full-time American workers. And for any purpose, maybe you get sick, or maybe, you know, it's your kid's school play, or maybe you just got to run errands, or you just need a break.
I think a lot of people could get behind that.
Yeah, I think this is a sleeper issue. It's a very popular issue, I'm going to push hard to get it done. So that's a priority of mine. Stock trading ban is a priority bill of mine. More funding for career and technical education is something that I've also gotten involved in. There's a lot of good jobs out there that don't require a four-year college degree, but they do require some training.
Right.
And so more funding for career and technical education, whether that be in the construction trades, healthcare, law enforcement, public safety, all things that I think we can do more as a country to support and promote, but we need to make sure that school systems have the funding to actually deliver that instruction in a robust way.
I don't think there's a caucus to do away with daylight saving time, is there?
I don't know if there's a caucus, but I would support that. I would support that.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I will tell you, as a parent of young kids who are not old enough to know what time is, it's been a little rough this week having them get up an hour earlier than they used to.
Ask the pets, too.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Congressman, we'll no doubt get a chance to touch base again before too long. I want to thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for having me.
All right. Congressman Seth Magaziner here in the 2nd Congressional District in Rhode Island. It's been a pleasure. And, you know, as I say, perhaps we'll get the chance to talk once again. And thank you all for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Steve Klamkin for Latino Public Radio.